Welcome back. Dermot texts in to say, re-radio broadcast from the Third Reich. Where does Lord Ho-Ho, William Joyce, fit in? Well, he was broadcasting to Britain, and that's one of the reasons, one of the people who was actually executed after World War II was Mr. Joyce from Galway. One of the first projects launched by the government in 1922 was to change the language spoken by the population from English to Irish. More than 90 years on, we still have a largely English-speaking population, so has this project been an abject failure? On this, the first weekend of Seachtain na Gaeilge, we'll be reviewing the measures taken to revitalise our native tongue from the 1920s onwards. But first, let's hear how these people responded when they were asked to say a couple of fuckle for our reporter, James Keating.
Couldn't start to.
No. Couldn't start to.
No, I don't. I used to, but I haven't spoken Irish since my school days.
Sha, Tomaquid Gaeilge Kirkalor. It's Moonshore Gaeilge is Bunskull Moonshore Agum, so Urum, the Brown Urum. Janey May Law and Botoon, Och Toshi Kirkalor.
How may Gama?
A bit, not a lot though, to say anything. Smahlum Coca Millish. I don't know what else really.
Couple of vocal. I was in an Irish college for a year, and I'm sure, given a chance to get back to it, I'd be okay.
All the fun of them?
Honest a tattoo. Come on, let's kill. You're not Doris.
I went to an Irish primary school, so yeah, I speak a good bit. Not as well as I used to, but. Let me see. Tattoo against your clash on Showstar or Orty Radio Hain? I hope I got that right. It's long ago.
Right, a random selection of people and abilities there. So what does that tell us? Well, I'm joined by Donal Flynn, author of a book called The Revival of Irish, Failed Project of a Political Elite, no standing on the fence on that one, and by Professor Michael Cronin of the Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences at Dublin City University. Donal, first of all, looking back to 1922, in a very broad sweep, what was attempted to revive the Irish language? How was it attempted? And where are we now?
Well, it's multifaceted, of course. But I would pick out two main streams in order to get a shape on it. And one main stream was what you've mentioned, to achieve a language shift in the population. And the other was the stream of political symbolism, or to make it an icon of the independent state. So as far as the first aim was concerned, achieving a language shift in the population, well, it would never really have happened. And there was a sense in which there was a willing suspension of disbelief because nobody ever believed it was really going to happen, except maybe some small groups for some small periods. The main instrument for that was the education system. But even the First Minister for Education, Owen McNeill, said, "You might as well be putting wooden legs on hens as trying to restore Irish to the school system." So we wouldn't shift our choice of language from English today. The Irish people had long decided on English as their language. So we can say that aspect, that stream of events, hasn't produced anything like the hope for result. We're not changing our language. The second stream, that is the political symbolism or icon of the new state, that, of course, goes strong. That has the advantage of not needing anybody to speak Irish in order to implement the measures. The government can hire people to translate texts, it can put up notices and use that symbolism, which it does. Our present state at the moment, I would say that psychologically speaking, there's a change occurring and the taboo has been broken, really. Enda Kenny in 2006 said Irish should not be compulsory in the Leaving Cert.
Even though he's fluent in the language himself.
Yeah, that didn't cause any seismic shift. But what it did do is move the goalposts psychologically a little bit.
OK, I want to bring Michael in at this stage. No one believed it was going to happen, is what Donal is suggesting. Would it be fair to say that by 1922, that particular bird had flown? The famine, Daniel O'Connell, a variety of other reasons, meant that Irish was not going to become the native language of the Irish people.
I think you have to make a distinction between two things. One is the thinking behind the notion of the kind of the implementation of the restoration of Irish as the common language of the Irish people, in which really goes back to the late 1890s, where the cultural nationalist movement made a kind of following argument that there was little point if you like, and having a revolution where you kind of have the post boxes painted green, that there had to be a sense in which political sovereignty was had a cultural claim. In other words, a political sovereignty that simply led to a kind of mimicry of the former master was seen as something that was worthless. So there had to be a kind of cultural legitimacy, and where the cultural legitimacy for the political project, and they're kind of drawing on the thinking of German romantics and so on, is that the language and the associated culture would be one of these things that would give a kind of distinctiveness to it, and would therefore make the claim for independence a rightful one. And you know, Haydn's de-Anglicisation of Ireland speech is very much making this point. I think and if you look at the kind of the books that have described Conall Ghaeilge and that movement in the 1890s through the early part of the century, there was very significant popular support for what they were doing. What happens, it seems to me, when the government then comes to power, the first Comnenale government, is they are, I think, very committed to this project, because what they see is the internal political coherence. The fundamental problem that they have, however, and this is a problem that dogs the revival of Irish in decade after decade after decade, is there's absolutely no comprehension of what the notion of language restoration involves. In other words, it would be rather like trying to run an economic policy with nobody, no economists, no people in the central bank, no ESRI. In other words, there's no sense in which there's a kind of a scientific policy that will allow a language.
So it was Ober in Ashka to use an Irish phrase. It was a waste of time because they didn't put the structures in place. They didn't do it properly.
Well, I think to some extent, I mean, it's regrettable the structures weren't put in place, and it has done continuing damage. You can see it even the people that you interviewed there in the Vox Pop, where, you know, there is goodwill, but the problem is that language is a social construct. It's not an individual one. In other words, it's got to happen sort of in a wider social arena, and that's what proper language policy does, that the Catalans did, what the Quebecers did, and so on. But the thing, I think, is that you know, we do go in for a great deal of self-flagellation in Ireland. It's a kind of national pastime, and I think it is important to look at some of the very substantial achievements, a thriving literature in modern Irish, a very lively media scene, the standardisation of the grammar of the language, the written forms of the language, and so on, which are very, very important, if you like, instruments in the use of a language in a modern setting.
We've had an amazing reaction already on text. I will bring you some of these texts in the course of the conversation and at the end of it. But Donal, was it a noble experiment that went wrong? That, you know,
I think
properly?
What has been said there is perfect summation. And with all the positive aspects of it. And what went wrong is not an incidental, it's not a technicality. What went wrong is that it was adopted as a political ideology. And political ideologies have mantras and slogans and elements, which don't have to accord to reality. So it's possible for the political power to carry on their slogans or their iconism or their symbolism, making claims and making suppositions for the ideology, which don't have to be related to reality. The reality was that the communal language, which has just been described, and the sinews of a communal language, had been chosen by the Irish people already, and they continue hourly and daily and weekly to choose it now. So when the ideology says, what we've got to do, because this is a national imperative, is we have to impose it equally on everybody. Everybody has to have it compulsorily in the leaving cert, and it's something that we put down on top of the people. That will be false, and that will not be corrected by a few better mechanics.
Okay, so was, Mike, the Irish project, was it something that was being imposed by a political elite, the members of whom were accustomed to getting their own way by any available means, up to and including violence?
Well, I think to some extent, it's two kind of questions there. One, I think that when you look at what happens post 22, what's quite remarkable is that you have a government that establishes one of the longest standing democracies in Western Europe. It sets up an unarmed police force, that the degree to which the democracy resists extremely intense pressures throughout the late 20s, the 30s and the 40s, I think points, in fact, to the political maturity of many of the groups, if you like, who came to political power in Ireland. And I think the other thing to remember as well is that there's always a danger, I think, in these arguments of assuming that people are extraordinarily gullible, a certain kind of retrospective condescension towards people in terms of the choices that they make. And people consistently voted for parties which had as an explicit element in their political platform a commitment to the revival of Irish. So it seems to me that in
but
that
was
way,
a real commitment?
Well, it seems to me that the difficulty was that people were committed or they supported parties that had this commitment. The problem was that both the parties themselves and I suspect the voters had kind of underestimated the nature and the extent of the challenge that they had.
I mean, it was page
10
of the manifesto, and people generally didn't get as far as page 10 of the manifesto, if you take my point.
No, but on the other hand, if they had objected as strenuously as some people claim and were so deeply unhappy with it, then it's unlikely that politicians would pursue something, year after year, decade after decade.
Okay, just some of the comments that have come in. The Congested Districts Board, says Sean Beattie in Donegal, the Congested Districts Board recognised the importance of Irish when it recruited Irish speakers to teach in its lace schools in the Donegal Gaeltacht in the 1900s to promote Irish industry. It used symbols of Irish myths and legends on carpets and crochet. The board organised lectures in Irish in its health promotions, even using caravans covered in Gaelic slogans to traverse the county to advertise its message. So that's an element of British policy in Ireland, I think the point is there. Sheila says, being an old OAP, I think we the older people should spatter a bit of Irish to our grandchildren to keep it alive. Vincent says, my idea is to have everyone speaking Irish is to make it illegal to teach or speak it. With our rebel attitude, everyone would be speaking it in 12 months. So that's the contrarian Irish coming out there.
Well, GSM. I come back on what Michael said there. It is true that people over the decades voted for parties who said they'd support Irish. But on both sides of the coin, the parties themselves and the people themselves, support in inverted commas didn't mean speaking. It meant supporting it for certain pietas of the inheritance and the ancestral language and a project of the founding fathers of the state. And it meant enjoying the symbolism and being comfortable with the symbolism of this for the state. It didn't mean speaking it. Neither side meant speaking it.
And do you suspect that to some extent, because of native Irish bloody-mindedness, that because there was an attempt to impose it and because Irish people had spent the previous 10 years trying to shrug off a regime which was essentially imposed upon them, that they weren't going to go for it?
I think that's a sideshow. That's true. People get their backs up when you impose something on them. What's more relevant is why they didn't want it imposed on them, why the measures were felt to be in opposition or an imposition by an important segment of people over the decades. The reason was that they had chosen their language. We have our language. English is our national language. Irish is another thing. It has another role, not a communal language, not part of our higher education. So its role is different. It's symbolic. It's affectionate.
Yeah, I think the problem, though, is it's rather like the notion of Groucho Marx once said that ideology is what the other fellow thinks, and I think similarly the notion of choice. I mean, choice always seems to me to be conditionally determined by your circumstances, with the kinds of choices that you can make, and one of the kind of recurrent difficulties for Irish speakers in Ireland is the sheer impossibility of living a full life in Irish. And I'm talking about kind of isolated speakers, in large urban centres. I'm talking about people who live in Gaeltacht communities and so on, where the common language is Irish, but the trying to make that a social reality in terms of, you know, access to services, dealing with agencies and so on, becomes extremely difficult. You know, the commissioner who's just resigned, Sean O'Quinn, was talking recently about the fact that he a whole series of kind of proposals that were put to government that were cost neutral to facilitate the lives of Irish speakers, and these were just kind of dismissed out of hand. So I think the kind of the notion of, you know, compulsion cuts both ways. You know, it seems to me that you can be as much compelled to speak English, you can be compelled to speak Irish.
Just a few more comments, and I just want to bring Donald back in there. Somebody texts to say, as Steve Biko said, the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. Ireland still remains in the hands of their oppressor and has never grasped independence, victims of cultural imperialism. Somebody else says, somebody who's trying to learn Irish, who is English, lessons from most courses are too expensive. I like the sound of the language, but Neil Arrogant Ogham. Excuse the spelling of money, he says. It is misspelt, but it doesn't matter. Well done. And keep at it. But somebody else says it's very expensive to improve your Irish or get fluency. Conor na Gaeilge charge 80 to 130 euro for 6 to 8 weeks, only 30 off, 30 euro off if on the dole. Should be a better subsidy. And the whole Irish language revival effort was a classic De Valera manoeuvre, useless and still costing a fortune in waste. No doubt you'll have the usual careerist on the programme with an interest in this useless project. Well, it started long before De Valera, in fairness. It started with the Cosgrave government in the 1920s. Madness. Should be more emphasis on European languages. We all know that Irish is useless outside this little island of ours, and damn all use here, but no politician will admit this. It's a lovely, useless language, says Mary in Tipperary. And states' efforts are appalling. We learn Irish for 13 years and can't put a sentence together. They failed. And there are lots more comments. But, I mean, Donald, isn't the bottom line that if the government had not attempted some element of compulsion, if the government had not favoured the Irish language, that it could very well be dead as a doornail today?
Yes. And I don't think it's right to retrospectively rubbish what people thought in the past and attempted in the past. I think it's much more relevant to Sean O'Curran, for example, his analysis and his reasons for resigning and what Michael has just said about services at state level in Irish. To have full services in two languages on a state level, you'd need two language communities, like in Belgium, or as emerging now, apparently, in Ukraine. So I suppose we're lucky that we didn't revive Irish, because we would have the nation split on linguistic grounds. But when you come to our different blues views, which aren't absolutely different on the matter, there is a bit of a litmus test, which is, would we agree, or would we ask, should Irish be compulsory in school for every student all through Leaving Cert? In other words, you do have to have stable parts of a school curriculum. You do have to have a stable part of government policy. This was a policy rooted in people's wishes or aspirations of some sort, although we can nuance that. But when we now look at the concrete situation in front of us, would we say we still want all our students, all their time, up to the Leaving Cert, to have to do Irish?
OK, finally, Mike, let me reverse that question, as it were, and suggest that perhaps all government policies since 1922 have not made a jot of difference when it comes to the revival of the Irish language.
No, I think there's two points. One, I think if they hadn't done anything, Irish would have gone the way of Manx and Cornish. It would be, you know, a dead language. I think secondly, and I listed the achievements earlier in media, language and somewhere, I think there's been, you know, quite considerable gains have been made. I think thirdly, in the question of compulsion, it always strikes me something of a red herring, insofar as it seems to me that one of the things about anything that you do, from music to dancing to, is that there's an element of compulsion involved. What's important is you identify the rewards. And I think this is really the challenge, is to identify what it is that is valuable, both culturally, economically, politically, and so on, about speaking the language, so that the effort that is involved has a genuine payoff.
Just a couple of texts before we finish. Revive the state, the educational system, and the Hooray Henrys, who made everyone without a bloss feel inferior, killed it stone dead, and it hasn't changed. And Owen says successive governments have been virulently anti the Irish language. Irish has been effectively removed from the civil servants service, are there, and there are no serious attempts to change that. Donal Flynn and Michael Cronin, thank you both very much indeed for joining us this evening. And Donal's book, The Revival of Irish, Failed Project of a Political Elite, is available from Amazon. Details on our website. Now, on this Seachtain na Gaeilge, I want just to let you know about a TG Cathair programme that might be of interest this week, Vóti do Bhunáil, which tells the story of how Irish women fought for and won the right to vote. It'll be shown on this Wednesday, the 5th of March at 9:30, and again on Saturday, the 8th at 8:50pm. After the break, adoption files from the National Archives covering the years 1948 to 1972.